Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na, 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me. Need a little help, y'all. Yes, I do. Need a little help. Say it, boy. Need some help, y'all. I'll change the world. What it used to be. Can't do it alone.
Can't do it alone.
Need some help, yeah.
Need some help, yeah.
Wake up everybody to MPH Radio, Missing Pages of History. We will continue to travel down the road of filling in our missing pages of history, so we'll have a map we can use to acquire our people liberation and to help humanity to move forward. Again, welcome to MPH Radio on the third day of March, 2024. Our topic today is fallacy and to force fascinate. That's our topic, and our topic comes from a recent article that was published by Global Research on February 29th, 2024, titled "Fallacy: Rethinking After Attempting to Force Fascinate the entire population of the planet. Fauci raised dire concerns about the efficacy of mRNA vaccines in combating respiratory viruses. We will have a critical discussion on this subject today, and as always, we welcome you to call in and participate by dialing 818-337-0016 to share your views and your thoughts. But before we get to our topic today, like always, we want to give you something to think about as relates to this concept of freedom, followed by Susan with MPH Many Facts, and a message to the community by Alex Joyner. That is the order of our program for today. So at this point in time, we want you to take your pen and pencil out and just give you something to think about. And this thing to think about is the thing that we call freedom. Freedom is something often fought about, died over, and people continue to fight over, and there are walls after walls after walls. Everybody wants to be free. Some of us have freedom and many of us don't. So if we're going to fight over this concept and battle this concept, I think it's be important for us to have a better understanding. What is this concept that we call freedom? So we're going to give you one concept of freedom today and give you something to think about as we look at this phenomenon called freedom. Freedom is having the ability and the means to control those necessities for life. Freedom is having the ability and the means to control those necessities for life. What you think about that concept? While you think about that concept, we're going to now bring Susan in, which she's going to share with you for this week, our Black Benefacts. We'd like to welcome Susan to MPH Radio. Welcome, Susan.
Hello. For today's Mini Black Fact on Saturday, March the 2nd, 2024, we'll be doing a shout of Shakur. Hip-hop can be a very powerful weapon to help expand young people's political and social consciousness. But just as with any weapon, if you don't know how to use it, if you don't know where to point it, or what you're using it for, you can end up shooting yourself in the foot or killing your sister or brothers. Ashanti, 1947, was a part of the Black Liberation Army in the U.S. in the 1970s. She was imprisoned for her resistance of oppression. She escaped and fled to Cuba, where she now lives and still struggles for African people. She stated, "Every day out in the street now, I remind myself that Black people in America are oppressed. It's necessary that I do that." I've just given you a mini fact for Shakur, Asada Shakur. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan, for your Black mini facts for today's program. And to our listening audience, this is Missing Pages of History. One of the things we do with this organization, or one reason of formulating and creating this organization, is to have information that is available to our youth, to the children, so they can learn about their history, who they are, and why they are. And at this point in time, what we're going to do is take a station break where we dedicate this song to our youth and the children today. And when we come back, we have Alex Joyner speaks to the community. This is the voice of MPH Radio.
Beauty they possess inside.
That's right. This is the voice of MPH Radio. We welcome you back. And we must find a way to teach the children. And one of the ways we have found how we best teach the children is to create a segment called Alex Speaks to the Community. At this point in time, Brother Alex is going to teach to our children and the rest of the world on a message to the community. Welcome to MPH Radio, Alex.
Well, thank you, Brother Robinson, and the panels, this and Susie, again, giving us a program with knowledge that we need to carry on every day, because it seems like African Americans and the people of color are sometimes the least informed people on the planet. So we need to correct that and know our history and know what's happening in our communities. And on that note, I would like to say liberal and radical Republicans started almost the day the party was formed in 1850. Liberal Republicans who wanted slavery and all its benefits to end for the southern states was extremely vocal in politics. Radical Republicans sought a much slower pace of integration and laws to liberate and protect the Negroes in America. The radicals tolerated the South's use of slaves as they had became rich over the trading with the South. The liberals had cut ties with the slave owners and refused to do business with them and saw a religious belief that the treatment of the Negroes in the South was morally wrong and against the teachings of the Bible. Slavery was about free labor and the exploitation of a people that could be controlled by laws. The radicals knew this better than anyone else, and they passed laws to keep the Negroes in bondage and servitude to their masters. Many radical Republicans owned slaves and did not want to release them or to treat them as equal citizens under the law. The liberals saw themselves as a dividing force of good versus evil, and soon they would be settled on the battlefield. Before the Civil War started, many had made a decision to continue to support slavery or end all the atrocities because of it and keep the Union together. After the war was over and the liberals won, they retreated to their easy steps of life and let the radical ideas of many rage on in Congress and the Supreme Court. There was one African-American man, John Mercer Langston, who was elected to Congress, spoke about the conditions of his fellow newly freed kinsmen and how things had to change to accommodate them. He worked with Senator Charles Sumner on the passage of the Civil Rights Bill of 1865. It would be the last legislation Congress would pass until 1957 to help the causes of the African Americans in the United States. It was an honor to have Mercy speak for all of us. U.S. Senator from Virginia, John Mercer Langston. I enjoyed checking into a motel or hotel without first looking in a green book that told me of the establishments that welcomed Negroes. I got on a train without looking for colored cars only. Most of all, I know a trial will be much fairer when the jury is a mixture of all races and not just one. This was the law before John Mercer Langston and others sought to change them with the Civil Rights Act of 1875, sometimes called the Enforcement Act, passed in response to the civil rights violations against African Americans in 1870 and before. John was born December 14, 1829, as a free child to his mother, Lucy Lane, Jane Langston, a free woman, and his white slave-owning father, Ralph Qualls, in Louisiana County, Virginia. His mother was Mrs. Qualls' former slave, whom he set free. John learned to read and write early and earned a bachelor's degree in 1849, then a master's degree in theological in 1852. He is the first known black to apply to an American law school. In 1854, he was admitted to the Ohio State Bar. He married Caroline Matilda Wald, a mixed-breed woman from North Carolina, who he fell in love with while she was attending Oberlin College. They had five children and spent many years in happiness together. Being a noteworthy abolitionist in the Ohio Anti-Slavery Party as acting president, John played a key role in the Overton-Wellington rescue of 1958. In 1863, he encouraged thousands to join the newly formed United States Colored Troops to fight for their freedom. He even helped enlist men in the Massachusetts 54, 55, and Ohio's first black regiment. After the war, he was appointed Inspector General for the Freedmen's Bureau to oversee federal labor contracts, setting up banks, businesses, and schools for African-American freedmen and their children. In 1864, he helped charter the National Equal Rights League and was elected president and served until 1868. This was the forerunner of the NAACP, or the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. In 1868, he moved to Washington, D.C. to serve as the founding dean of the Howard University Law School, the first black law school in America. He became acting president in 1872, establishing strong academic standards. In 1870, he began to work on the Civil Rights Act that President Ulysses S. Grant wanted to stop discrimination at the polls by Southerners. John saw many more injustices that, and he began to work with Senator Charles Sumner and others to finally pass a civil rights bill to protect all citizens in their civil and legal rights, providing for equal treatment in public accommodations and public transportation, and prohibiting exclusion from jury service. Provisions contained in the act were later readopted by Congress as the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and of 1968, as they relied on the Commerce Clause contained in Article 1 of the United States Constitution, rather than the Equal Protection Clause within the 14th Amendment. President Grant later appointed him to the Board of Health for the District of Columbia. In 1877, President Rutherford B. Hayes appointed him as minister to Haiti. He returned to Virginia in 1885 and was appointed by the State Congress the first president of Virginia Normal and Collegiate Institute, known as Virginia State University. He served in the United States House of Representatives as a Virginia delegate, being the first black elected and his last for another century. In 1890, he served as a board member to St. Paul's College. In 1894, he wrote and published his autobiography. From the years 1891 through 1897, he practiced law in Washington, D.C. John died on November 15, 1897, at the age of 67, I was buried in Washington, D.C. He was the great-uncle of the poet James Mercer Langston Hughes, who we know today as Langston Hughes. Oklahoma Colored Agriculture and Normal University, founded in 1897 in the all-black town of Langston, Oklahoma, now bears his name as Langston University. There are hundreds of awards and tributes made to John as city schools, buildings, roads, streets, and others bear his legacy. Thank you, John Mercer Langston, a free black man who was his brother's keeper. And I thank you, family.
We'd like to thank Brother Alex and his message to the community. And we'd like to remind all our listeners that all views that are expressed by the particular speaker are his or her views, and not necessarily the views of the station, its affiliates, nor its members. If you'd like to speak to the community, we welcome you to email us at mphradio@yahoo.com, and we'll give you an opportunity to have your voice heard. So at this point in time, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick station break with music with a message. Followed by that music with a message, we're going to play the article for discussion today as we talk about falsely rethinking after attempting to force vaccinate the entire population of the planet. Falsely raised dire concerns about the efficiency of mRNA vaccines in combating respiratory viruses. Our theme today is falsely and to force vaccinate. We will have that discussion when we return with our special guest, Brother Haki Kamathi Nchobi, who is a writer, a researcher, and educator. We'll critique and give his perspective on the subject, and we ask you as well to weigh in. This is MPH Radio.
Thank you. preacher. And it seems nobody's interested in learning but the teacher. Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration, aggravation, diminution, opposition to my nature. Control the sound of soul, shooting rockets to the moon, kids going up to soon. Politicians say more taxes will solve everything.
And the band played on.
Shocking report, Morenz ETAL, 2023, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the former director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, NIAID, has. This statement marks a 180-degree turn away from previous statements and public health strategies that have heavily relied on mRNA technology to curb the spread of diseases like COVID-19. Rethinking after attempting to force vaccinate the entire population of the planet. In January 2023, Fauci and two colleagues outlined concerns rooted in the interplay between respiratory viruses and the human immune system. Unlike systemic infections, they claim, respiratory viruses primarily replicate in the mucosal linings of the airways, posing unique challenges for vaccine-induced immunity. This, of course, is not true. The virus replicates in any cell with an ACE2 receptor, and the highest density of virus detected in the lining of the gut. But we'll move on from Fauci's inability to grasp the full scientific literature. Here are the key arguments underpinning Fauci ETAL's reversed position. Mucosal versus systemic immunity, mRNA vaccines are designed to elicit systemic immune responses, primarily through the generation of neutralizing antibodies. However, respiratory viruses require a robust mucosal immune response for effective neutralization and clearance. Fauci and colleagues argue that mRNA vaccines, in their current form, do not adequately stimulate mucosal immunity, potentially limiting their effectiveness against respiratory pathogens. Durability of protection, another concern they point to, involves the duration of protection offered by mRNA vaccines. Respiratory viruses, including influenza and coronaviruses, exhibit high mutation rates, leading to the emergence of new variants. The implication is that mRNA vaccines may not provide long-lasting immunity against these ever-evolving threats, requiring frequent updates and booster shots. SMH. Immune imprinting, the phenomenon of original antigenic sin or immune imprinting, is also highlighted as a potential issue. This concept suggests that exposure to a specific viral strain via vaccination could bias the immune system's response to future infections, making it less effective against different strains. While mRNA vaccines can be quickly updated, repeated vaccinations might reinforce this imprinting, potentially complicating responses to new variants. Pardon me while I duct tape my head to keep it from exploding. If not mRNA, then what? Discussion brought forth by Dr. Fauci's reversed position naturally concludes that ongoing research and development in vaccine technology is the answer. Fauci et al. Go on to discuss the future of vaccine strategies, emphasizing the importance of developing vaccines that elicit broad, durable, and mucosal immunity. Odd they did not cite my articles from 2020 and every other reasonable scientistic who saw that spike-only vaccination would yield temporary, shallow, misfocused immunity. Fauci et al. Call for exploring novel adjuvants, delivery systems, and vaccine platforms that can overcome the limitations of current mRNA vaccines. Things Fauci said. Fauci in January 2023 published that mRNA vaccines have failed against COVID-19. Here are some key quotes from the article that others can use to truly understand how anti-mRNA Fauci and his colleagues are. On the challenge of mucosal immunity, durably protective vaccines against non-systemic mucosal respiratory viruses with high mortality rates have thus far eluded vaccine development efforts. This statement underscores the difficulty in creating vaccines that offer long-term protection against viruses that primarily infect the mucosal surfaces of the respiratory tract. Of course, we knew this before 2020, and it's true. But it's also a lie within a lie, given that the vaccinated have a higher risk of reinfection, and the evidence of immune impairment, and it after Delta, don't take Fauci's first statement as forthright. On the rapid replication and transmission of respiratory viruses, in this review, we examine challenges that have impeded development of effective mucosal respiratory vaccines, emphasizing that all of these viruses replicate extremely rapidly in the surface epithelium and are quickly transmitted to other hosts, within a narrow window of time. This highlights the challenge of developing vaccines that can effectively interrupt the transmission of respiratory viruses, which replicate and spread quickly. This was true of these viruses before mRNA vaccines came along, and there was ample evidence from studies of this technology in mice and rats that the immunity was not durable. But it's also a lie within a lie. The mucosal lining is not the only site of infection. The GI tract also suffers, especially in the earlier variants. On the limitations of current vaccines, the limitations of influenza and SARS-CoV-2 vaccines remind us that candidate vaccines for most other respiratory viruses have to date been insufficiently protective for consideration of licensure. This quote points out the current limitations in vaccine efficacy against respiratory viruses, including those using mRNA technology. Vaccines have failed against respiratory viruses. Pardon me while I pick up my jaw from the floor. On the need for mucosal immunity stimulation, one intriguing approach to pursue, as noted above, would be making vaccines that stimulate innate immunity, which might be ideally suited to hit and run infections by mucosal respiratory viruses, which characteristically infect, spread locally, and are transmitted to others before significant adaptive immune responses can be mobilized. What? Wait. Fauci knows about innate immunity? Next, he'll conclude that many, if not most, people in the population didn't need the vaccine, right? But hold on here, this is the crux. He's saying that he thinks that an effective vaccine strategy against respiratory viruses may need to focus more on stimulating mucosal and innate immunity rather than solely inducing systemic immune responses. Think about that for a minute. Rather than inject and bypass mucosal immunity, where have we heard this before? On suboptimal pulmonary immunity, current influenza vaccines are suboptimal at both preventing infection and eliciting pulmonary immunity. Although this is specifically about influenza vaccines, it reflects the broader challenge in eliciting effective pulmonary immunity against respiratory viruses. Yet there the influenza vaccine program sits, ineffective as ever. According to Fossey, vaccines that focus on systemic immunity do not fully address the unique requirements for combating respiratory viruses. One question, where were these concerns prior to 2020? Why did policy not reflect this reality?
We welcome you back to NPH Radio. You just listened to an article from Global Research as it relates to this recent virus epidemic that took place the past several years. This article written on February 29, 2024 by Global Research and entitled Falsely Rethinking After Attempting to Force Vaccinate the Entire Population of the Planet. We thought that we would have this critical discussion on what took place the last several years as it relates to this virus, so we can maybe make people a little more conscious of not only what took place, but be better prepared for future possibilities of scenarios similar to one that we just encountered as it relates to COVID-19. And to have this discussion with us, we have chosen to invite Brother Hakeem Kamathi Mitrofi, who is a researcher, an educator, and an organizer. And he has spent long hours of time researching this particular subject matter, and we would like to hear his critique and his narrative on this particular subject today. So at this point in time, we first would like to invite and thank Brother Hakeem for coming on NPH Radio. Welcome, Brother Hakeem, to NPH Radio.
Thanks for having me, brother.
Well, Brother Hakeem, I don't know if you want to say anything more about what you are and what you do, and then we can proceed with this discussion on this particular article and the theme, Falsely and to Force Vaccinate. And then this information that you want to share with our listening audience on who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Hakeem Kamathi Mitrofi, and I've been involved in political struggle for over 40 years. My thing is that I think that not only is education important in terms of bringing about the badly needed changes in society, but I think that one of the things that we have to do is we just kind of have to diversify our understanding of this thing we call the U.S. I think in diversifying the understanding of this thing we call the U.S., I think it gives us much more clarity in terms of, precisely what it is that we're confronted with, as a community. Why these problems that we're confronted with persist, and what we have to do in order to remedy ourselves from these problems that adversely impact our lives on a daily basis. And so in that regard, I think this whole question around AIDS is a very good one. Because the reason is that one of the things we have to begin to appreciate is that for many of us, the banner of politics is a source of great discontent. A lot of us are very, very, for whatever reason, we're adamantly opposed to the realization that this is a political world. But yet, we have to understand politics in its proper context. And when we talk about this question in terms of so-called coronaviruses, we have to understand the politics implicit in terms of this whole process. And so what I'm going to do today is talk briefly about some of the things, sort of highlight what the clip talked about, but in a way in which hopefully is amenable to the masses of people, in that I will try to present it in a way that's very, very elemental in terms of, the presentation, in hopes that, people can appreciate, the very real problem in terms of the politics as related to COVID-19. So I'll start by saying this, brother. One of the things that, when we talk about the origin of COVID-19, one of the things that's very, very interesting about it No one was ever clear in terms of the origin of COVID-19. In fact, at one point we were told at least that COVID-19 was a result of animals, some kind of virus from the animals, and that in fact was responsible for the spread, the proliferation of the COVID virus throughout the world. Well, that particular view fell in disarray. And then next we were told that, well, the problem is that the virus comes from a lab in Wuhan, China, and that in fact that was some type of experiment being conducted, and the virus escaped the laboratory and it impacted the world. Well, that theory also fell into disarray. Finally, we were told the origin of COVID-19 is very simply a manifestation of SARS-2. SARS, which stands for Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, that in fact COVID-19 is an offshoot of SARS. Well, we found out, many scientists revealed that in fact the reality is that even though there were similarities in terms of SARS-2 and COVID-19, the reality is that they're two separate viruses. And so that leads us to the question in terms of, well, if there are two separate viruses, then the question becomes, how is it possible to innovate a virus if you don't know the origin of the virus that you're trying to defeat? So when we talk about the origin of COVID vaccines, it's a very, very interesting one. And I think people should understand first and foremost, when we talk about the origin of COVID vaccines, we have to understand that Pfizer or Moderna was the principal responsible in terms of innovating mRNA technologies. Now, the M in mRNA stands for messenger. So in other words, what it does is that it's the whole premise on this vaccine is that somehow that the technology would use these vaccines in a way in which it would impact the cellular structure in the human body, forcing the cell to produce certain enzymes that are consistent in terms of defeating whatever kind of viruses that have infected the human body. Of course, I'll talk about how erroneous that belief is, but in any event, I think it's important that first and foremost we understand that Pfizer and Moderna had a very lucrative incentive in terms of pushing this whole COVID-19 against this whole COVID-19 idea to the world. Now, here's the thing. When we talk about this origin of the COVID vaccine, this vaccine has been existing for over 30 years. Now, here's the problem. Even though this COVID vaccine or this technology has been existing for over 30 years, but prior to its implementation in the year 2019, supposedly when COVID-19 hit the world, there were no published studies in terms of this technology as relates to biodistribution. Now, biodistribution is important in terms of when you talk about innovating vaccines, then certainly you have to take into consideration the various kinds of demographics that you're going to encounter, or when we talk about genetically, in terms of the diversity that genetically exists in terms of human beings. It has to take in consideration that biodiversity in terms of the genetic diversity in terms of human beings. Also, at the same time that the implementation of these particular vaccines, there was no published reports or studies on the cellular intake based on different cell types. Now, of course, we understand the human body has different cell types. Now, if you have a situation where supposedly this vaccine is going to impact a particular cell in terms of stimulating some immune response to defeat the virus that's inside the human body, then the question becomes then, what impact would this technology have on cells that are not the intended target of these vaccines? And that wasn't even addressed in terms of studies or any kind of public study. So the mere fact that these things were not presented prior to the release of these vaccines raises very, very, very real concerns. And thirdly, one of the things that when we talk about in terms of all of COVID vaccines, one of the things that we talk about the important terms of studying the impact of vaccines, the effectiveness of impacting human cells is very, very key in terms of disseminating these particular vaccines. One of the things is that, when we talk about the release of COVID-19 vaccine, in particular Moderna and Pfizer, we talk about the fact that there was no study done in terms of how it will actually impact the human cell. We've been told that, in fact, that it will impact the human cell, but the reality is that the process in terms of impacting human cell is more intricate than the technology allows, which means that, in fact, as the piece alluded to, that this whole notion in terms of these vaccines being effective was a whitewash. It simply wasn't true. Now, and lastly, I think, when we talk about the lack of reporting, or scientific studies in terms of these vaccines. We never talked about the impact in terms of mRNA fragments escaping to other parts of the body. Now, one of the things that when we talked about the fact that these vaccines are particularly targeted to impact specific cell structures, in particular the respiratory tract, as the piece alluded to, we can keep in mind that these fragments also impact the GI or digestional tract of the human body, which means that the very negative impact in terms of, you know, this technology is been known for a very, very long time. But in fact, what pharmaceuticals and indeed the Center for Disease Control did was to vehemently disguise or conceal the reality that, in fact, these vaccines' potential for destroying the human body was very, very real. It was no mere imagination. In fact, most reports reported, even prior to dissemination of vaccines, at the point they started disseminating the vaccines, that the ill effects, they theorized that the ill effects between on the population between those between the ages of 18 and 39 would be immense. But they stated that it would be lethal for those 60 years of age and above. So this notion in terms of the destructiveness of this vaccine was well known at the time these vaccines were disseminated. And we need to take that into consideration and understand the political character in terms of this whole question in terms of COVID-19 and the so-called vaccines. You know, one of the things, you know, brother, you know, when we talk about the effectiveness, you know, of mRNA vaccines, one of the things we have to keep in mind, you know, even though we're told that, you know, the effectiveness was assured, that somehow this vaccine was able to penetrate the structure of the human cell, thus making it possible to fight off, you know, this so-called COVID virus. The problem with that analysis is that it's simply not true. Now, according to Dr. Paul Offit, there are three problems with this notion that, in fact, that the vaccines are actually capable of stimulating, you know, or actually penetrating the cellular structure to create these kind of responses that are needed in terms of attacking these viruses. Now, one of the things that Dr. Offit, he talked about the fact that the cell cytoplasm that exists to destroy foreign DNA means that when you introduce those vaccines to the human body, the natural inclination of the human body is to fight it as an invader. Indeed, the vaccine is perceived as an invader, and that is precisely what the cell cytoplasm is designed to do. So, interestingly enough, Dr. Fawcett was very clear on that point. He knew that way back in time, in his time in office, that he knew that, but he refused to divulge that. At one point, he did talk about it, but then he quickly backtracked and said that, well, what he said was not quite what he meant. And so he was, in reality, aware that the devastating impact in terms of these vaccines' impact on the human body, particularly in terms of the function of cells. Also, Dr. Offit, he talked about the fact that when you talk about the mRNA fragments penetrating the cell's nuclear structure, the problem with that, in order for it to penetrate the cell's nuclear structure, it has to be capable of doing such a thing. In order for it to do such a thing, you know, it has to penetrate the nuclear membrane. The problem with this so-called vaccines, they're very, very clear that the vaccines are not capable of penetrating the cellular nuclear membrane. So if it's not capable of penetrating the nuclear membrane of the cell, then how is it even capable of in terms of stimulating the immune response that are needed in terms of defeating, you know, COVID-19? So this is something that we have to take into consideration. Again, this is hardcore politics. And lastly, I think one of the things that Dr. Otoof talked about, he talked about the fact that, you know, even if the mRNA vaccines were capable of entering cell nuclear structure, it would need an enzyme called the integrase, okay, to mail with a human DNA. Now, of course, one of the things that could the cell recognize this vaccine as being alien, it attacks it. And so, therefore, in order for it to gel, in order for it to make it possible to get a immune response, the cell has to recognize it. But there is no enzyme which in mRNA vaccines that makes it possible for the cells to recognize this vaccine as part of the human body, which enables it to actually perform a service in terms of destroying that which is foreign to the human body, in particular the COVID virus. So clearly, brother, this is all political, and we have to keep this in mind and understand. So when we talk about this stuff is hardcore politics. Now the piece talked about the fact that the kind of deception employed by people in positions of power, you know, pharmaceutical companies, Center for Disease Control, the government itself, that refuses to divulge information that was pertinent in terms of the health of the population by concealing information that really laid out some real problems in terms of the so-called vaccine that supposedly was designed to help. There has been a great deal of pushback in terms of, you know, not revealing the information as time going on since 2019. More and more information has come out in which people, scientists and doctors are actually expressing the reality in terms of these vaccines. And here recently, as of June of 2021, the Center for Disease Control initiated an advisory report stating that if you take the vaccines for COVID-19, that you can strongly anticipate heart problems like myocarditis or pericarditis. And so clearly this is very, very problematic in terms of health of the community. Also, I think, you know, one of the things, you know, I think we have to be very, very clear when we talk about the politics in terms of vaccines. You know, recently there was a study that was conducted in which over eight countries with 99 million people, of those studies, they found that the medical conditions impacting the large majority of the 99 million people consisted of neurological defects, blood defects, heart conditions. So as a consequence of taking this vaccine, a lot of people died as a result, who needlessly died as a result of taking this vaccine. The reality is that if these people had not taken this vaccine, you would have had some deaths, but not tremendous amount of deaths, simply because you have a situation where you have herd immunity, in which historically when you have viruses or epidemics that impact the country, normally you have some deaths, but normally the human body adapts terms of these viruses, and it would result in minimal casualties or deaths. But actually what happened was that the vaccine, this mRNA vaccine, actually contributed to more deaths, more needless deaths, should I say. Now, let me just conclude with this, brother, and I think this is important that, you know, for people who want to know more about the politics behind COVID-19, there was an article in the Global Research magazine that was titled "There Was No Pandemic," and I think people would be well advised to actually read this particular article. Now, the article states that according to Dr. Dennis Raincoat, he's a physicist and a scientist, the methodology of measuring pandemics and its impact on specific demographics over periods of days, weeks, or months, or years were excluded by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention methodology. In other words, the Center for Disease Control had a methodology in place to adequately evaluate the effectiveness of this vaccine, but chose not to do so. The report goes on to say, called the all-cause mortality methodology, Dr. Raincoat was able to pinpoint the deception being disseminated about the COVID-19 and the effectiveness of vaccine by Pfizer and Moderna. Dr. Raincoat outlines the history of viruses and mortality, or deaths resulting from viruses. Between 1957 to 1950, the CDC identified H2N2 viruses, which is bird flu. In 1968, it also identified a different kind of bird flu called H3N3. And in year 2000 and 2009, identified an even more effective bird flu called H1N1, and was labeled the most problematic viruses of all. Now, two problems with these analyses in terms of being an epidemic. One, at no point did the U.S. government validate alleged viruses as pandemics. So despite the fact that you had the potential in terms of massive death, the U.S. did nothing in terms of combating, you know, the potential in terms of massive deaths. But what happened was that with this potential in terms of massive deaths, these wholesale deaths never materialized despite the pandemic that existed in terms of bird flu. So that gives you some understanding in terms of political character in terms of these viruses. Here it is that you know that the potential exists where lots of people are going to die, But the government does nothing. The government does nothing because they understood the whole logic behind herd immunity, and they understand by doing nothing, they actually save lives as opposed to destroy lives. Secondly, he alleges that the virus has never manifested discernible mortality or levels of death. Now, if this is not disconcerting enough, the original presence of H1N1 in 1918, the original bird flu, was alleged to be the textbook viral respiratory disease pandemic occurring at a time prior to mass use of antibiotics in the year 1928. Now, the report goes on to say, unlike H1N1 virus in 2009, the H1N1 virus in 1918 existed at a time of poor sanitation, poor hygienic practices, and economic stress. Later, it was ascertained ensuing deaths were from bacterial pneumonia, not H1N1 viruses. So the mere fact that we thought that the bird flu virus would be effective in terms of killing off a mass number of people, to the extent that people died, which was relatively small, those people did not die from H1N1 viruses. They died from a bacterial pneumonia and from poor sanitary conditions. But it just goes to show you in terms of the politics involved in terms of putting fear in the population by telling them, listen, this thing is going to wipe out lots of people. And, of course, when the medical establishment says so, people tend to believe it. So I think it's important that people begin to research stuff and not simply take, you know, stuff, you know, verbatim, you know, from the authorities, because we've got to understand that the authorities have a vested interest in terms of propagating certain lines because their jobs, their livelihood, their status may well depend on it. Now, the report says, goes on to say, while plausible deniability is not needed in terms of promoting an inherent threat, in Dr. Raincoat analysis, other examples of COVID-19 virus efficacy or effectiveness in unleashing large-scale deaths have been greatly exaggerated for political effect. For example, most scientists agree timing is key to virus spreading. In the case of COVID-19 virus, it was documented in March 11, 2020. We were consistently told the epicenter of viruses originated in Wuhan, China around the year December 2019. Implication being in 3 months, the virus traveled 7,058 miles to the northern hemisphere in the west, impacting the U.S. and Europe, while impacting North Africa and most of Asia simultaneously, a collective landmass of over 26 million miles. Many sites allege the time associated with the spread of COVID-19 is questionable, given a calculated time needed to spread would take months, if not years, with or without airplanes. So again, the terms of the spread of this particular virus was suspect. So when we talk about in terms, when scientists talk about the time it needs in terms for these viruses to spread, this virus did the unimaginable. It was able to spread over the course of 7,000 miles from now to 3 months to first affect the West, then subsequently affect Africa and Middle East. The irony is that Africa and Middle East are closer to China than the West is, in particular the United States. So the question becomes, how would the virus do that? If the virus exists to its own devices, then you got to ask yourself the question, well, how viruses don't skip. Viruses are very, very direct. They go from point A to point B. They don't go from point A to point D, from point D to point F, or point F to point Z. They don't do that. They go directly from point to point. The mere fact that this virus is able to skip around, even though supposedly it originated in 2019, speaks volumes in terms of the kind of complicity that's taking place or the political character, you know, the political manipulation that is taking place in respect to this whole question around, you know, what is COVID-19 and what does it really represent? At this point in history, brother, we don't really know what COVID-19 is. We only have speculation. The kind of research that is needed in terms of clearly identifying what COVID-19 is still ongoing. And the reality is that the fact that, you know, that this vaccines were allowed to hit the market prior to knowing what COVID-19 virus really was, speaks to a conspiratorial nature. So for those African people and those Asian people and those progressive white folks who refused to take a vaccine, their apprehension was justifiable. And given this history in terms of this kind of deception, we have to understand that there is very much a political character as associated with this whole question in terms of COVID-19. And with that, I conclude.
You know, Brother Hakeem, when I read this article that was written by Dr. James Lyons Waller, one of the things that struck me real clearly was that seeing like Fauci and the governments that was part of this whole process of developing and creating this scenario, this historical around this COVID-19, they were all hand in hand and functioning under this concept they call plausible deniability. Did you get a sense of that, Brother Hackey?
Oh, exactly. And that is one of the points that Dr. Raincoats make, the question in terms of plausible deniability. I think one of the things is that when you're deceptive like that, when you put out a lie like that as a medical specialist and you know it's a lie, but you're doing it to preserve your job or to preserve your status, when you do that, you know that's a slim possibility somebody in the medical establishment who's also an expert are going to come forward and say what you're saying is disingenuous. It's not true. And so therefore, you want to have a certain amount of plausible deniability. You want to come back and say, yeah, well, I said this, but I really meant that. Or you want to, at some point, just totally deny that you even said it. As other points, you just simply refuse to respond to allegations that, in fact, what you said was disingenuous or in fact, a lie. So you're absolutely correct. Plausible deniability is pretty much a function in terms of you're going to work, you know, in the capacity as a official of the U.S. government. Plausible deniability is a skill that you have to sharpen. You have to learn how to do that. So when you say something that you know is disingenuous or you know is a lie, but you know in order to keep your job, you got to do that, then you got to have a backup plan. So when people come at you and say, listen, what you told me was disingenuous or was a lie, you got to say, well, you know, but it was taken out of context. What I meant was this. So you got to do that. So that's precisely what's happening. But in Fauci's case, you know, I think the lies are beginning to catch up with him. I mean, being called a fraud is beginning to bother him. So more and more, he's gradually leaking more and more truth, you know, as time go on. I suspect that at the point where he sufficiently, you know, has sufficient economics or sufficient money or retirement funds, I think at that point he'll be free to tell the truth, to speak truthfully in terms of what COVID-19 was really all about and what those vaccines actually represented. But I think it's a process. I think a lot of times we don't learn this truth until these people are old or sickly about to die, and then they reveal precisely what transpired. But the information pertaining to the disingenuousness of COVID-19 and the vaccines, that's well documented. All people have to do is go out and read it.
You know, in terms of my practical experience going through this phase the last couple of years, I had the opportunity to talk to some of the doctors in the medical field, and they're very much split over this whole concept of COVID-19. Some of them told me directly they will not take the shot. They will not take the shot. Also, I noticed that the U.S. Congress created special laws where they will be immune from having to take the shot. And I couldn't figure that part out. If it was the vaccine and threatening to all mankind, why would anyone be given the privilege to not to have to take the shot? But they exempt themselves from the shot. So I'm looking at all these things, and to me, something doesn't add up. And recently, they have even came out publicly in some other documents, a public statement that they admitted now these shots will not protect you from even catching the virus. So with this confusion, Brother Haki, this article seems very consistent in terms of what we're seeing and what we're living. So I'm just wondering in terms of one of the things we need to do as the people, as a population, as a world, to really look further to this whole question. What really did take place during this pandemic? Because if we don't learn what took place during this pandemic, there will be another creation in a similar situation where they will do this a lot more effectively in terms of causing more harm and damage to people than not necessary. Your response to that narrative, Brother Hakeem?
Yeah, it is interesting. When we think about, you're right, when you talk about the fact that these viruses are in the best interest of humankind or human beings, when you think about that and then you turn around and they turn around and say, well, okay, well, politicians in the Congress voted themselves reserving the right not to take the vaccines. At the same time, they mandated that the public take them. If you don't take them, you lose your job. That is ironic. But in addition to that, brother, you know, one of the things is that, when you start talking about legal remedies, you know, for acts that are perpetrated by people in positions of power, it's the cornerstone of supposedly American democracy. Well, the mere fact that the government sort of this gave the pharmaceuticals carte blanche protection against being sued, I find it very ironic. If this thing is good for people, then the fact is that that shouldn't be a concern in terms of potential lawsuits. But apparently, people in positions of power knew that, in fact, that the efficacy or the effectiveness of this vaccine was overstated, that they knew there was something fundamentally wrong with that. And I suspect that as relate to politicians, I suspect they also have some inside information, which is why they excluded themselves from being compelled to take the vaccines. That is very, very ironic, don't you? And I agree. That is very, very ironic. And, you know, one of the things that I think you're right, I think that to the extent that when you talk about, you know, political posturing, you talk about the role in terms of propaganda and the ability in terms of conditioning people to think and behave the way in which they want, we got to understand that if they can disseminate information and get us to do things against our own best interests, and they succeed, in which indeed they succeeded in terms of COVID-19 vaccines, they can do it for other things. And this is very, 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 we got to be very, very concerned about that. And one of the things that, through my studies, one of the things that I think is important that people understand is that there's a concept called long-termism. And long-termism is a concept in which they're very powerful throughout the world of devising ways, not only in terms of maintaining power, but to maintain control over the entire world. And so implicit in this kind of strategy in terms of maintaining power for the elites is the role of medications, of medicine. So this notion in terms of the release of these vaccines, you know, at this time speaks volumes in terms of the desperation of the elite in terms of creating technologies which are geared not only to control the masses of people, but potentially eliminate large number of the people. And so we have to take into consideration that, you know, when we talk about the political aspect in terms of existence in society, we have to understand that this is a political world. As much as we don't want to hear that, the reality is it's a political world, and we have to think politically. It doesn't matter if you're spiritual. It doesn't matter if you're cultural. It doesn't matter any of those things. What matters is that you understand that, you know, when people in positions of power do things, they do so with the realization that what they're doing is a benefit to themselves, not to humanity. In that context, we owe it to ourselves in terms of understanding the political character of the society. And so when they come up with anything, then first and foremost, what we have to do, what we must do, we must research and understand the reality in terms of what it is that we're being told and whether or not what we're being told is legitimate or not. And if it's not legitimate, we have a moral, if not political, obligation to tell people that what you're being told is not true. Be careful. Please read this. Please read that, you know, because it's important. And you're absolutely correct. And the propensity in terms of implementing, you know, those measures which are counterproductive to the aspirations or to the health or to longevity of the population is very, very real. And we got to understand that when we talk about the dissolution or the destruction of the decline of capitalism, we got to understand a lot of people who have benefited, a lot of the elites who have benefited from capitalism, who are making tons and tons of money, want that system to persist. They're going to do whatever they can by any means in terms of ensuring their longevity. If that means killing off a large number of the population, means starving a large population, if it means harming large portions of the population, they're going to do what they got to do in terms of survival. That we have to fundamentally understand. So a political reality, and so when they come up with something that sounds suspect, it probably is, and it's come upon us to research and to understand that this is a political world. And being a political world, we have to fundamentally understand that people in positions of power do political things.
Well, Haki, I'll say one more thing and get your response to this narrative, and then we will open up our lines to those who would like to contribute to the discussion. We'll be coming to Brother Alex next. But Brother Haki, you know, you raised the issue that it's very political. And I agree with you in terms of, I think the banking world needs to look at this scenario. Many of the forces who was behind and pushing this this experiment, this forced vaccination on the world population. Many of these are the same forces who have created social policies that is not in the interest of human development. There are policies that contribute to large death rates among the masses of the population throughout the world. There are also these same forces who create social policies such as structural adjustments where they force government to take resources and or necessities out of the needs of the people in their various governments and you pay off wealthy individuals. So I don't understand what is the rush. I don't understand what is the interest or desire for them to have an interest, even if there was truly a true virus killing all masses of the people, where they will have an interest in terms of trying to stop this virus from spreading, given the fact that they have a very destructive position on killing off large sums of population through that policy. Your response, Brother Hackey?
Listen, 1 + 1 = 2. It's very, very clear. The history is undeniable. When you look at the history in terms of ruling class interests, we got to be very, very clear. What they do is in their interest, clear and simple. Whatever they do is in their interest. Even though they may couch it as somehow they're concerned about humanity, the bottom line is never about humanity. And people got to fundamentally understand it. In fact, if you empower humanity, then you disempower the elites because they lose their power. And they're not going to do that. They're going to do all in their power to maintain that power. We have to understand that. And so when you talk about, social policy, let's be clear, you're absolutely correct. The same elites who innovate social policy, whether you talk about national policy in the United States or international policy throughout the world, you got to understand that the things that they do doesn't serve the interests of humanity. It serves the interests of that elite. And we have to fundamentally understand that. In America, we talk about, in the so-called richest country in the world, we talk about the level of hunger and poverty that exists in society and the level of unemployment that exists in society. We have to fundamentally understand that all that is structured. That's not an accident. That's by design. When you talk about fiscal monetary policy, and we talk about the role in terms of money, in terms of facilitating or actually stimulating an economy, well, to the extent that you control that flow of money through the country, that determines the amount of jobs that are going to be created, determines how many people are going to have access to food, who will determine how many people have access to affordable housing. It's a structural problem. It's not an accident. And so I know we like to blame Republicans in terms of facilitating all these social ills, but the reality is that irrespective of Republican or Democrat, the bottom line is that they both work with the context of a structure in the benefit of the wealthy, who is geared toward debasement of human beings, along to ensure that the wealthy continue to prosper. We have to fundamentally understand the reality. And also, when you talk about structured adjustments, you talk about in terms of actually creating policy to make sure that countries like continents like Africa, Asia, Central and South America remain poor. This structural adjustment is part and parcel of a process, and which has been going on for centuries. And we have to understand one thing: in order for these people to carry out these structural adjustments, in order for the elites to carry out these structural adjustment programs, they have to have the support of bourgeois leadership in these countries who are willing to carry out these policies to the detriment of their own people. So we have to fundamentally understand that. But to answer your question, brother, you're absolutely correct. As much as we fight hard not to deal with the reality, one of the things we have to understand that when we start talking about elite interests, we have to understand that elite interests and the interests of the masses of the people diverge. There is no commonality between the two. And let us not deceive ourselves in thinking that the rich interest is our interest. It's not. They don't worry about poverty. They don't worry about homelessness. They don't worry about unemployment. They don't worry about any of that stuff. Those are poor men. That's a working person's interest. That's not the interest of the wealthy. The interest is maintaining power and control, and that's precisely what they're doing. So all of this is about power and control. And so, for instance, when we talk about the question in terms of immigration, understand that as much as we vilify and demonize immigrants, the bottom line is that when we talk about in terms of the structural elements of the society, when we talk about how the system is structured, whether it be economic, politically, or even socially, when we talk about the structures that exist in place, keep in mind all those structures benefit of the wealthy. So if they can get us to fight one another over trivial concerns, then they can maintain power and control. And that's what this is all about. And this is what our people have to fundamentally understand. And, of course, if we superimpose the questions of the racism in terms of everyday American life, then we understand just how difficult, how intricate our struggle is in terms of trying to become free in a society. We have to understand that these people's interest is not in line with our own interests, and as such that we have to fight independently for our interests, because if we don't, we succumb to the propaganda, we succumb to the disinformation that's put out by the elites for the sole purpose in terms of maintaining their control and domination. That has to change, but only if people work together to bring it into reality.
Thank you, Brother Hakeem. We're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we're going to play music with a purpose. And when we come back, we're going to open up our lines. We're going to go with Brother Alex and then Sister Susie, and then the lines will be open as we continue to discuss this article titled "Fauci Rethinking After Attempting to Force Vaccinate the Entire Population of the Planet." It was written by Dr. James Lyons Willard. We'll be right back. This is Missing Pages of History.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right?
When I was pregnant in jail, I thought I was going to have a baby and the baby would never be with me, but I was acquitted a month and 3 days before Tupac was born. I was real happy because I had a son.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was the fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said tears with my baby sister. Over the years we was poor than us, a little kid. And even though we had different daddies, the same
some drama. When things went wrong, we blame mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who's thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a queen, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. Dear mama,
please, no one above you.
You all appreciate it. Nobody tell us it was fair. No love for my daddy, cause the coward wasn't there. He passed away and I didn't cry, cause my anger wouldn't let me feel for a stranger. They say I'm wrong and I'm heartless, but all along I was looking for a father, he was gone. I hung around with the thugs, and even though they showed a young brother love, I moved out, started really hanging. I needed money of my own, so I sang it. I ain't guilty, cause even though I said it feels good putting money in your mailbox, I love paying rent when the rent's due. I hope you got the diamond necklace that I sent to you, cause when I was low, you was there for me. You never left me alone because you cared for me. And I can see you coming home after work late. You're in the kitchen trying to fix us a hot plate. Just working with the scraps you was giving, and mama made miracles every Thanksgiving. But now the road got rough, you're alone, trying to raise two bad kids on your own. And there's no way I can pay you back, but my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Baby, don't you know
and dear mama,
baby, no one
above you. You all appreciate it. Pour out some liquor and I reminisce, cause through the drama I can always depend on my mama. And when it seems that I'm hopeless, you say the words that can get me back in focus. When I was sick as a little kid, to keep me happy there's no limit to the things you did. And all my childhood memories are full of all the sweet things you did for me. And even though I act crazy, I gotta thank the Lord that you made me. There are no words that can express how I feel. You never kept a secret, always stayed real. And I appreciate how you raised me, and all the extra love that you gave me. I wish I could take the pain away. If you can make it through the night, there's a brighter day. Everything will be alright if you hold on. It's a struggle every day, gotta roll on. And there's no way I can pay you back, but my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. Dear mama,
place no one above you.
You all appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you.
Dear mama, dear mama.
We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. We are discussing this interesting and profound article that came out of Global Research on February 29th, 2024, which is titled "Fauci: Rethinking After Attempting to Force Vaccinate the Entire Population of the Planet." This article has so many implications and creates so many possibilities that we think that the thinking world today needs to become conscious on not only what took place the last couple of years around this virus, this virus called COVID-19, but also the future implications that are even not yet to even be think of, because there are ongoing changes and impacts that human beings are being that human beings have taken on as a result of being injected for these vaccines. So we have this critical discussion, and to us, there seems to be a lot of missing pages, and we're just trying to make our contribution to fill in some of those missing pages so we have a better understanding of what took place in the past so we'd be better prepared in the future. So at this particular time, we're going up our phone lines. We're going to go to our brother Alex. We're going to bring him in and give him the floor for him to share some of the thoughts that he's got from this article and from this discussion so far that has taken place. Brother Alex, welcome to MPH Radio, and some of your comments and thoughts based upon what you have read from this article and what you have heard so far. Your thoughts, Brother Alex.
Well, again, thank you, Mr. Lee, for giving us this opportunity to discuss this subject. And a thank you for Haki, for him giving us this wonderful analysis of what we need to know. You know, because the bottom line is, do we get vaccinated because we're thinking that it's safer than getting sick? You know, in the article, it gave us a lot of challenging things to think about. But from a person has actually worked on the other side and developing the vaccinations, when I worked at a medical lab, a testing lab facility that worked along with the World Health Organization, that worked with the CDC, that worked with the government, infectious disease from Fort Detrick, Maryland, United States Army, germ warfare. The government does so many different things that is just amazing that the people would never know. Case studies that we used to do for all types of diseases, whether it was nerve gas, mustard gas, smallpox, Ebola, anthrax, and coronaviruses. We work with everything. HIV, I mean, it was just so much that we tested for, and individuals all over the world. So we would get specimens flown from everywhere, from Asia, China, Japan, all third world countries, Russia, everywhere. We would get stuff. And we would do testing, you know, undercover, I would say, testing to a certain degree, just to find out how the body reacts to all these different agents that we can introduce to them, from a level of just breathing it in, being injected by it, or eating. So there's a lot there in my history of what I know about vaccinations and how safe they are and how some are not safe, and where you get to a fact where you're using a live virus or non-live virus. So there are different mutations and variants and different things like that, and everybody's body is not the same. So viruses won't react in everybody the same way. So the conscious objective for a lot of people to realize is, will that work or be good for me? Will I experience COVID-19 is what the doctors called it. I tested positive two or three times before I was really wanted to go. Even working around viruses at a very, very early age of my life, and knowing, you know, how bad it was the longer you wait. And it was because of the information that I personally knew that took me a second or two to go ahead and you know, make that commitment to take the antiviral drugs, you know, that make me feel better. And I had been boosted and everything, and I still caught it. You know, so taking all the shots and everything, and I was well aware that even though you boosted and take all the shots and everything, that doesn't mean anything. You still get it because it mutates. So we have to understand that you can take 1,000 shots and still can get it. It doesn't matter, because by the time it gets to you, and it's mutated over and over again, then you will get something totally different than what someone else had. So it's not the same germ or viral infection, you know, that goes around that we commonly think of as the regular flu, which we take a flu shot for every year, and pneumonia. We take a shot for pneumonia. And we take many shots, you know, or vaccinations over the course of our lives for measles and mumps and everything, just to make sure that, you know, we stay healthy. So it gets back to, you know, if we want to stay well, and what are the consequences? Every drug that came out of the company I work with and every drug we tested for other companies had a certain amount of deaths. Before on television, we see now all these side effects that every drug causes and eventually may cause death. There's not a drug on the market that will not kill someone. Now, what is an acceptable death rate? Does it go in the millions when you dispense billions of doses? It probably would. So when we look at something that's rushed to market, much faster than any other drug would be, not properly tested, in case studies, nothing to verify, and it's just rushed along and approved, you know, for use, how dangerous can that be? I was in the labs. I can tell you, it can be extremely dangerous to have something forced, you know, upon you. Because what are the safety protocols? You know, where do you say, you know, we can't do this when you have a Congress and president and people wanting a solution right then, right now? People were getting sick. We went to everything. We went to washing our hands, went to wearing masks over our faces. We had gloves on. When we went shopping, we had masks on, and we drove around in our cars. I mean, it was just amazing what we went through. Schools shut down, businesses shut down, everybody, because we were totally free of what the government was reporting was a deadly disease, and they had no answers at that time. So as we develop and get into testing, and finding out what works and what doesn't work. Yes, there are going to be deaths, heartbreaking deaths. Now, who's going to be targeted most? Obesity is going to be one. People with bad hearts, respiratory problems, they're going to be the first ones to die. Will it be the young? Will it be the old? Would it be the ones with poor health care? Would it be the homeless? People will die. That's where the vaccinations arguments started, because so many people were dying. We were looking for answers, and we couldn't find them. Couldn't find them fast enough. Our loved ones were passing. So, not to defend the government, because the government's supposed to support the people. It's not supposed to not care about the people. But we found that in every government that exists, that there are portions of populations that are overlooked, not thought about, not counted for. And as Hakeem said, it's all about making money and wealth sometimes. And the last thing is the people. Once the money is made for the elite, then who cares about the rest? I would like to see what the profits are still at Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson & Johnson and the many others that came out with the different drugs. I would just like to see what their profit margin was for the past 3 years, or when we say actually, I'd say four, almost 5 years, just to see what their profits were, where they started and where they at today as they continue to push back the nation drugs. Yes, Mr. Lee.
Alex, can I just add a point to your point? I'd like to see where the profits margin was for the undertakers who benefited
oh,
from
yeah.
all these deaths and didn't have to pay these insurance, or who got paid for all these people dying.
Oh,
I mean, it was the money making machine for a few people.
It was a money making machine for everyone, as they say, from the PEP, you know, supplies, you know, all the way to the undertakers and everything, because the cost of everything was going up. Caskets went up, burial plots went up, mausoleum costs were, everybody, it was, you know, began to rise the prices. And you would think because of more people dying, they would actually lower the prices if they had more demand. But no, and because it was a public health crisis, you would think that they would, you know, have some type of humility. But no, it was all about making money. You know, the country, as they say, they made more millionaires during that time than any other time. So how do you make money when people are not working, when they're at home? So this was a big farce to a lot of people. And I think a lot of people in the community, like me and people I still talk to, you know, saw this as a disgrace for hardworking employees, you know, that were actually trying to find a cure, knowing that trying to find a cure for the common cold would have been much easier than finding this. And we've not found the cure for the common cold today. So how are we going to find a common cure for this? It was impossible, you know, to do so. You may stop a few, but then how many people's are you damaged, bodies are you going to damage, you know, in the process? And that's what happened, you know, in not having the time to do the research, to do the studies or anything, to find out how it was affecting the livers and the kidneys and all the organs in the body, the brain, the heart. Everything has to be affected, because once you put that foreign thing inside of you and inside of a cell, is no telling what destruction is going to be going on, because you do not have years of testing to know. Not at all. So, you know, we took a chance. You know, the whole world bought into the idea and took a chance on the belief that it was safer than getting sick. That was the bottom line. We took a chance that this virus that was being spread around at such a great pace, thousands of people every day getting it, thousands of people every day dying, that we took a chance to believe that it was safer to do this over good common sense of waiting to make sure, you know, that this thing was safe. But we go ahead and do it, and we're going to wait for the research later and see how it comes back. So that's what we get now, is the return of what should have been going on for years, because coronavirus, all this has been around for years. It is not something that just popped up yesterday. Testing in this area should have been done years ago. Well, why wasn't it? Again, we got to go back to the government. The government know that it existed. But what? It did nothing about it. Does it know the cure today? I doubt it. I doubt it will ever find the cure. I doubt there will ever be a shot or a pill, a nasal spray, anything that you can do that can stop it. Because it's a mutating virus that affects every person differently. You may have some symptoms. I may have different symptoms. Someone else may have no symptoms. But we could all still have COVID. That's the thing. So we have to realize that, you know, science as we see it is very limited, and especially medical science is very limited in curing the body. We have cancer. We have heart disease. We got so many different things out here to fight. Parkinson's. It is no way that we're going to solve most of these things. They will be unsolvable. There will be no cures, you know, for them. We can treat some cancers, yes. We can treat a little Parkinson's to a certain degree. But eventually, the masses of the people will have these diseases, and there's nothing that can be done for them. And it was a wonderful article again, Mr. Lee, and I'm just thankful that, again, you brought it to our attention, because we need to know before we go take our next shot, you know, what are our chances? What are we doing to our unborn children? So we need to think about this, you know, very seriously, and talk to our health providers and find out, is this safe for me? Not for my neighbor down the street, but is this safe for me? I have cancer. I have low immune system. Is this safe for me? What are the chances? What are the side effects? You know, what is the side effects going to my unborn child? You know, we got to have some serious discussions so that we can move forward. And again, I thank you, and I can't wait to hear the rest of the responses here. This is just wonderful, Mr. Lee, and I thank you again.
Thank you, Alex. Next, we go to Susie. Susie, any comments or anything you would like to share with our listening audience as you read this article and based upon what you have heard so far? The mic is yours, Susie.
Okay. The only thing I said, when you think about Fauci, he was a physician, a scientist, and an immunologist, and he had 58 honorary doctoral degrees. The thing about it, him and the individuals that made this decision to vaccinate the whole population of the planet, they knew, because even with the article, and you look at even with him rethinking it and the terminology that he uses, the mRNA variables, variants, innate, which innate is really, they knew most didn't need the vaccine. And for that reason, I think they should be held accountable to a certain extent, but I don't know whether that's going to ever happen because of the fact that he didn't retire, per se, from NIAID. What he did, he just stepped down. So by him just stepping down, that still gives him access to do things and be in the lab and whatever, just like they claim COVID, you know, the creation of COVID and how that came by and everything. I think at this point, even with him coming out publicly stating that he's rethinking it, somehow maybe we need to get him and his staff out of this research area, because the thing about it, we still don't really know what kind of effects that's going to be coming as a result of COVID-19. That's the one thing that I found interesting with the article and everything, just the fact, the terminology and everything that he used. So that's all I have to say.
Susan, I was thinking that if you share with this audience, you're looking at a medical program the other day, and one of the doctors explained to the audience about one of his friends were infected by the shot and what took place with them. Can you tell that story to our listening audience?
Okay. I'm trying to recall it. Let me think about it and come back to I'll come back. I'm trying to think.
Let me just put your memory. You talk about one man on one of the medical shows. His brother was affected by the shot because his body was eliciting electricity.
Oh, okay.
So tell that story.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Just on the other day on Karama, which is a daily, I call it reality show that comes on and everything, they had a brother that was on there, and he was talking about he gets shock attacks where it feels like something shocks his body and he vibrates doing it. He's went to several doctors. No one seems to be able to explain to him what's really going on. They've been running tests and everything. They said nothing showed up. But what happened, they had Dr. Ian, which he used to be on a couple of medical shows, and he was saying the thing of it is they really don't know and everything, and they're still doing tests and everything. But he wasn't surprised because of the fact COVID does carry different symptoms for different individuals and everything. And basically, he apologized to him because he really couldn't help him because he didn't know. he had never ran across a case like that. So that's just one example of COVID that we don't know what's in the future.
And I'm quite sure there are more stories to be told that's coming. Right now, we're going to our listening audience. We ask them to make their comments as it relates to today's subject. We'll go to caller 7236. Just make your comments, caller, and we'll keep moving forward. The mic is yours. 7236. Okay, let's move forward. Okay, let's go to the next caller. Caller, we bring you in. Your last four numbers are 4298. Any comments you'd like to make?
Thank you, Brother Robinson, Alex and Susie. This is Robert Moses. Thank you, and Brother Haki. It's been a pleasure to listen to you all as you've raised this issue. To me, it's a non-issue. It's resolved, basically. But I supported Dr. Fauci all along, and I still support him. It's clear that there's a process of discovering things, as Alex pointed out, and we make mistakes in the process. But we either succeed or we don't succeed. And I think he was successful. The pandemic, I think, was successfully dealt with. And I don't reverse correct verdicts. I'm not into conspiracy theories, and I'm not into Bolsonaro and Donald Trump's denial of the pandemic. And all this left-informed, right-in-essence rhetoric doesn't impress me at all. So anyway, I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. I think what we have just conveyed just now with this class, Carl, is how sophisticated this information can penetrate the population and make them look at the truth and see falsehood, make them deny the accountability of one's actions, particularly as it relates to other doctors who are in the same scientific field, who have the same expertise, and say they have no value. Again, this is the kind of world that we are fighting. This is why we created Missing Pages of History. We must bring information to the people from a different perspective that seek the truth and seek the realities of what we're dealing with, not based upon people who may have alternative motives to make money and use truth as a means to the end. Again, our role is to inform and to educate and to lighten. As they say, you can take the horse to the water or to the river, but you can't necessarily make him drink it. But at least you do have the obligation to make sure he has access to the water. This is what we try to do on MPH Radio. So, Brother Haki, we ask you to close out this discussion for your final thoughts and take on this whole issue of falsity and to force vaccinate. As we relate to this article discussion, Brother Haki, you give us your summation and why it becomes important for us to continue to look at not only what took place, but continue to monitor, you know, how to arrive at the truth so we'll be better off in the future if this scenario comes about again. Your final thoughts, Brother Haki.
Well, you know, brother, you know, one of the things is that, you know, and I think we've been very clear on this program, as well as, you know, previous programs I've been a part of. It's a role of propaganda in society. One of the things is that, you know, if you know a society engages in propaganda and you still fail to understand the significance in terms of independent research, then the problem's with you and not with the society. So it seems to me that, you know, when we talk about this, the disingenuousness of this whole COVID vaccine information, it seems to me that, you know, all it takes is a little research. And, you know, it's simply easy to simply say everything you disagree with is conspiratorial, because that way you don't have to do any research. You can simply say it's conspiratorial and dismiss it. But the problem is it won't change the reality of the situation. One of the things that, you know, we talk about, you know, one of the things, you know, just talk about the political character of COVID-19, one of the things is that, you know, people have been asking the question, do they use nanotechnology with COVID vaccines? And of course, if you go online and you look at it, they'll tell you, we don't use nanotechnology. It's not true. They do use nanotechnology. They use a different type of technology. They use lipid nanotechnology. It's a different thing. So they can conveniently tell the public that, no, we don't use nanotechnology, but in reality they use a different kind of technology, which is lipid nanotechnology. Well, so that's their way. In other words, if you don't have a scientific understanding, if you don't do the research in terms of understanding, then you never come to the realization that they use lipid nanotechnology. You come to the conclusion that they don't use nanotechnology because the media told, the internet told you they don't use nanotechnology. That's just the political character. And if we don't humble ourselves down, if we don't do the work in terms of trying to understand, you know, all this wishful thinking, it's not going to change the fundamental political character of the society. One of the things that the system is desperately wants to do, it wants to ingratiate us into a false sense of reality. If in fact we believe that in fact that government is motivated by the interest of the masses of the people, then we allow ourselves to be deluded into believing that in fact that what the government does is, it may be problematic, but it's something that can be resolved. But the bottom line is that all this stuff is structural. It's part of a system, I can't make it any clearer. If we don't understand the nature of the system, then we can never begin to deconstruct, begin to understand, you know, all these things that take place in society, and just why do these things take place in society? So with this vaccine, you know, and here's the thing: this information in terms of the falsehood of these vaccines have been discredited for a long, long time. I mean, over the last 6 to 8 months, more and more scientists and doctors have been coming forward to actually speak truth to the power. The mere fact that they've been doing that, the major media has not, as on a whole, highlighted the voices or exposed the voices of these people or these scientists and these doctors who are telling people what you've been told is disingenuous and it's a lie. Well, now the question becomes, why did they hide, why did they conceal, why did the powers that be, why did the elite conceal information that is so vital to the health of the masses of people? Because you've got to fundamentally understand in terms of structures, at the very top of the structure sets the elite. They determine the politics. They determine economics. They determine social. And it's very, very simple. If they're working in terms of their own self-interest, then why is it that people don't understand that when Pfizer and Moderna, keep in mind, we talk about the fact that this technology has been around for 30 years. The mere fact it's been around for 30 years, but no one did the research to the studies to look at this technology, but yet it was employed in 2019. And no one asked the question, how could such a thing be? Now, clearly the government had to have known, because in order for them to justify the release of those vaccines, there had to be some preliminary research or study in terms of the origin of this technology. So people in Congress, they knew, the powers that be knew the downside in terms of these vaccines. But what was more important was not the downside of vaccine. What was more important was a reset of the global economy. And this is why, you know, it's very intricate, very complex. Because, you know, one thing is we got to humble ourselves and understand that one thing, one aspect of society affects another. We should not think that what goes on nationally or domestically doesn't impact the international, or what goes on internationally doesn't impact the national. We have to fundamentally understand that all this stuff is correlated. It all exists for a purpose. It's our job to unravel the relationship between what's going on in America and what's going on throughout the world. What's going on throughout the world and what's going on inside of America. We have to do that. And so when we talk about this in terms of vaccines, that's very, very clear. You know what I mean? Now that the cat's out of the bag, that they know that what they propagated was false, that go on to a different strategy. How? When was the last time you hear them saying, "Oh, listen, you're going to take this booster for this vaccine, or you'll lose your job"? Now, when they say you got an option, you don't have to take it now. Really? Then you say it was a pandemic. So then, what happened between 2019 and 2024? What happened? How did it cease to become a pandemic? Why is it okay now? So what is that? What does that really mean? So it's just common sense kinds of stuff. You know what I mean? It's not conspiratorial. It's just fucking common sense. Excuse me. It's just common sense. If you take the time to read something and research and simply stop espousing, you know, oh, the right-wing crap about if you disagree, it's conspiratorial. That's the same thing the elite does. As a matter of fact, they're the ones who taught us in terms of labeling everything conspiratorial. That's how they get us to dismiss everything. If we disagree with it, we say, oh, it's conspiratorial. And so despite the history in terms of the peace that you played on the air, brother, and the information I divulged, despite that, people to conclude that everything is fine, I don't know what to say. If you conclude, despite this information that you've been told, both informally and informally, if you've been advised in terms of the real falsehoods as related to these vaccines, and you want to dismiss it, that's on you. That's your right to do so. But you have to fundamentally understand that your right to dismiss things that you don't want to hear is not going to fundamentally change the reality of the political situation our people find themselves confronted with. We have to confront reality no matter how painful it is. And you, and of course, anytime, and because you don't understand, everything becomes conspiratorial because you don't understand, you don't want to understand. And if you don't want to understand, then you could never appreciate the real dilemma that our people are confronted with in society. You see? And so this is the fundamental problem that we have. And so I'll simply say, conclude by simply saying that, listen, the elite has an agenda. That agenda incorporates propaganda. To the extent that propaganda is effective, it only affects it to the extent that people don't read and don't read and follow up on stuff. If you're content to read something and believe that that is the gospel truth, then you're less likely to try to read and find out for yourself precisely what's going on. Because there are periodicals, there are journals, there are people who are telling people reality. But we have to understand fundamentally that reality doesn't get to the masses of people. And the question becomes, why doesn't it get to the masses of the people? Because the elites who control the media outlets do not want to make sure it gets to the masses of people. So we have our work cut out for us. This is only the tip of iceberg, you know, but we really have to do more research. We have to do more reading. We have to, because the situation is critical. And I don't want to wait 10 years down the road and say, well, I told you so. It's irrelevant. I mean, you know, it's irrelevant. What is relevant is that right now that you begin to understand that when they say something, not to take it at face value and to do your own research, read journals and periodicals and finally to ascertain what's truly going on. It's not the elite's job to tell you the truth. It's your job to tell the truth. And with that, brother, I conclude.
Well, Haki, we'd like to thank you as our special guest as we took on the subject of dealing with falsely rethinking after attempting to force vaccinate the entire population of the planet. Falsely raised desired concerns about the efficacy of mRNA vaccines in combating respiratory viruses. Being with falsely, and to force vaccinate. You know, MPH Radio seeks to represent and be a voice of the voiceless. We come to bring perspectives and deal with issues that affect underserved communities, and we'll do our best to serve in that capacity. We invite you to join us 2 weeks from now on the 16th of March, as we continue to travel down our road of filling our missing pages of history. Until next time, we remind you that on the weekends, if you live in Richmond, metropolitan area of Virginia, you can see our live TV shows on the weekends, on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, at Comcast Cablevision, Channel 95, or Verizon, Channel 36. That's at 11 p.m. on the weekends. If you'd like to support the radio program, you can do that by zelling us at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com. All support is greatly appreciated. And again, we thank you for allowing MPH to come to your home this evening. We may not give you what you want, but we'll do the best to give you what you need. We know that information must be viewed as a tool to elevate, inspire, and enlighten our people to move forward. So until next time, we can leave you with some music, with a message, and we'll see you on the 16th. This has been the voice of MPH Radio. We thank you for joining us.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, Then I watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Look like nothing's gonna change. Everything still remains the same. I can't do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. It's 2,000 miles I roam, just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time.
We are here for all of us. while we are here,